Hello and welcome to Volume 45, Number 23 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 5th of June 2026. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by Dusty, Margaret H and Julie, with help and assistance from engineer Stephen. And in the news this week, a health watchdog is heading for the history books, Galston Beach sewage causing issues, and gulls are in the news yet again. All this plus Grapevine Extra, with the three ladies and Stephen discussing various topics, including babies. Just one birthday this week, and that's the birthday of June Stamp, which is next Friday the 12th. Have a great day, June. Right, time now to assemble the troops as Dusty, Julie and Margaret bring us the first part of the news.
Hello everybody. Well, it's Thursday again when we're recording. The time seems to be flying along this year. I've never known quite like it. However, I've got some really, really exciting news for you on my first item, and it's wrestling returning. A bonanza of wrestling is set to return to the town this summer. The World Association of Wrestling, known as WAW, kicks off its 2026 summer season at the Marina Centre in Great Yarmouth this Friday, June the 5th. It will then return every Friday from July the 3rd through to September the 4th, and also host a special afternoon show on August Bank Holiday Monday. A spokesman for WAW said, "It has a long and proud association with Great Yarmouth and Norfolk Wrestling, having promoted professional wrestling events in the area for decades. The promotion has become one of the most recognised names in British wrestling and continues to attract audiences from across the region. Many local residents will also be aware that Great Yarmouth played a prominent role in the filming of the internationally successful movie Fighting With My Family, which told the story of Norwich-born WWE superstar Paige and the Knight wrestling family. Numerous scenes featuring WAW were filmed in and around Great Yarmouth, helping showcase the town and its rich wrestling heritage to audiences worldwide. The upcoming summer season and series will feature family-friendly live professional wrestling with competitors from across the UK performing throughout the season at the Marina Centre. Friday's wrestling event starts at 7:30 with doors open at 7 p.m.
The Wherry Yacht Charter is partnering with the Museum of the Broads and Howe Hill Trust to present a special chance to enjoy Norfolk Broads heritage. Starting on Tuesday, July the 14th, one of the three remaining wherry yachts on the Broads will be at the Museum of the Broads in Stalham. For £38, guests can enjoy a two-hour experience, which includes a sail to Barton Broad, a ride on either the museum steam launch Falcon or electric launch Marsh Harrier, and entry to the museum. The wherry will be open for free viewing on July the 15th and 16th. On Thursday, July the 16th, the museum will host a Wherry Merry Night. That sounds good, doesn't it? A Wherry Merry Night at the museum event from 5 p.m. For £12, attendees can tour the Wherry Yacht and take 50-minute boat trips with musical entertainment provided by the Wherry Charity's resident lounge singer, Andy G. Fresh pizza from Monzu Pizza and a bar will be available. Tickets can be purchased at the Museum of the Broads, .org.uk. Then the Wonder of Wherries event returns on July the 18th and 19th at Howe Hill, just outside Ludham. All five wherry yachts and pleasure wherries will be present, offering short sailing experiences from 10 a.m. for £15 per adult and £7.50 per child. 3-hour cake and sail experiences will also be available on the pleasure wherry Andrea for £45. Advanced booking is recommended at wherry.charter.org. The Egyptian-themed wherry Hathor will be open for free public viewing with the nation's welcome. Howe Hill House and its gardens will be open with live music and stalls selling Norfolk produce, arts and crafts. On Sunday, July the 19th, Sirens of the Helm will perform at 3 p.m, followed by vocalist Sandra B at 5:30. This entertainment is free for everyone to enjoy.
Luxury Yacht Builder is set to close its facilities on the south coast to focus its attention on its Norfolk Broads base. Oyster Yachts has announced it will be winding down all production at its leased site at Southampton's Saxon Wharf by the end of this year. The company said it will instead be concentrating investment at its Wroxham boatyard, where it will continue to build yachts. A spokesperson said the restructuring will support a more focused and resilient operating model, with Wroxham as Oyster's centre of excellence for UK manufacturing. The Blue Water Sailing Yacht Builder, which also has a base in Ipswich, is consulting workers at the Southampton facility about redundancies in manufacturing, support and administrative roles. Both would not say how many posts are at risk or how many staff are currently employed at the site. The company employs more than 600 people globally. There is no impact on yachts currently in build or future orders. The spokesperson said, "We continue to build and deliver yachts as planned." The company also said it remains fully supported by owner and chairman Richard Hadida and the board, adding, "Yacht production at Wroxham continues as planned." Oysters plans to end production at its Southampton facility by the end of 2026, come less than a decade after it ran out of cash and went into administration in February 2018. As reported by the Southern Daily Echo at the time, the firm said around 160 jobs at the Saxon Wharf site were expected to be lost, along with 400 across all sites. A month later, the business was acquired by Mr. Adida and the company returned profit in 2024.
Now we return to some more entertainment with Summer on the Mag. An afternoon of community spirit returns to Magdalen Square this summer. Summer on the Mag, organised by St Mary Magdalen Church, will take place in Godston on June the 13th from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. The event will feature free family entertainment, live music, family rides and activities, and refreshments. A highlight of the day will be the Mobile Care Farm from Pakefield Pastures, where visitors can meet and interact with animals, including the chance to walk an alpaca. Reverend Matthew Price, Vicar of St Mary Magdalen Church, said, "Summer on the Mag is all about bringing our community together. We know that life can be busy and sometimes difficult, so creating opportunities for people to enjoy time together meet their neighbours and simply have fun is really important. We're delighted to be welcoming Pakefield Pastures back this year, and we're looking forward to seeing Magdalen Square full of people enjoying the afternoon. The event is open to everyone and aims to provide an accessible, welcoming space where local families can enjoy the start of summer together. Organisers are encouraging attendees to bring non-perishable food donations for Galston Food Bank, though contributions are entirely voluntary. Reverend Price said, "One of the things we love about summer on the Mag is that it reflects the best of our community. People come together to enjoy themselves, but they also look out for one another. If visitors are able to bring a tin or other food donation for the food bank, that would be a wonderful way of helping local families while enjoying the day." Summer on the Mag has become a regular feature of the local calendar, attracting hundreds of people from across Galston and the surrounding area, and entry to the event is free. And I know it gets supported extremely well, and it's always very interesting.
Two bars in the town are still up for sale after going on the market more than 6 months ago. Allen's Bar in Greyfriars Way, Great Yarmouth, is up for sale at a guide price of £350,000. The pub reopened in June last year after an extensive 18-month refurbishment, having been closed for several years and left in a state of disrepair. It was granted planning permission in April 2025 for the first and second floors of the premises to be converted into 9 holiday lets, which property agents at Everard Cole have said have been refurbished to a high standard throughout. The bar area is on the ground floor, alongside a refurbished toilet area. It also has a garden area with extra seating, a cellar and a kitchen. The bar, which is still open, was due to be auctioned off earlier this year at a guide price of £250,000, but still did not gain a new owner. It was being auctioned off alongside the Mitre Pub on George Street, with that sale also being unsuccessful.
Zoo has hailed a milestone moment after the successful introduction of 2 of its red-listed animals as part of a breeding programme. Thrigby Hall Wildlife Gardens said the introductions of 2 Sumatran tigers has gone smoothly. The pair had arrived as part of a breeding programme for the endangered species. A spokeswoman for the sanctuary said, "We are delighted to share that our Sumatran tigers, Raja and Lottie, have now been successfully introduced to one another. This milestone is the result of a careful, gradual introduction process. Our keepers have closely monitored every stage, allowing both tigers to become familiar with each other's scent, sounds, and presence before progressing to direct contact. By taking a slow and steady approach, we have been able to ensure that both animals remained comfortable and confident throughout the process. We are thrilled with how Roger and Lottie have responded to one another and look forward to continuing to monitor their relationship as it develops." Roger has arrived at Thrigby from Frankfurt in the summer last year, while Lottie was a more recent addition, arriving in March 2026.
And this next item is really rather disappointing for everyone, because yet another sewage alert is in place at one of Norfolk's most popular beaches. Galston, which has been named among the best beaches in the county and in the country and in Europe, is currently seeing sewage discharged into the sea. It is the 18th instance in 2026 alone. Earlier this week, Great Yarmouth First councillor Steve Grimmer branded the spills unacceptable. As a newly elected councillor and member of the Safer Seas and Rivers Service, I am deeply concerned by the scale of sewage discharges at Galston Beach, he said. These repeated discharges are simply not acceptable. Anglian Water must act now. Provide clear answers, and clear water, I would think. Reduce incidents and restore public confidence. A spokesman for Anglian Water, which maintains the system, said, "We know our customers and communities feel strongly that storm overflow discharges are unacceptable. Our long-term goal is to completely stop using storm overflows, but, of course, getting there isn't something we can do overnight."
Nearly 6,000 illegal cigarettes have been seized during a crackdown on the trade of illicit tobacco. The haul was uncovered by trading standards officers and Norfolk Constabulary during inspections of two businesses in Great Yarmouth, located in King Street and Northgate Street. In total, more than 5,700 illicit cigarettes, hand-rolling tobacco and 24 illegal vapes were confiscated during the inspections on Thursday. Scott Hussey, Norfolk County Councillor's Cabinet Member for Adult Social Care and Public Health, said, "Illegal tobacco does real harm. It undercuts law-abiding local businesses. It's sold cheaply to children. And the money flows directly to organised criminal gangs, often linked to modern-day slavery and human trafficking. This is a joint-up action at its best, and it sends a clear message. Norfolk County Council has zero tolerance for illegal products, and we'll do all we can to get them off our streets. The illegal products are now being held in custody while the matter is referred to HMRC's Track and Trace. The national operation will now trace the origins of the items and will charge any relevant penalties."
A domestic abuser has been recalled to prison after carrying out a string of shop thefts in Norfolk. Lawrence King, 37, was on licence after his early prison release when he went on a shopping spree in Galston. He was arrested after reports of thefts at stores on Blackwell Reach and Lowestoft Road between April the 22nd and the 8th of May. The 37-year-old was subsequently recalled to serve the remainder of his sentence, imposed for strangling his ex-partner after she refused to buy stolen meat from him. Norwich Magistrates Court was told he was captured on CCTV, entering shops and stealing multiple items, including alcohol, meat, coffee and confectionery. King, of Tribune Court in Cambridge, pleaded guilty to 10 counts of shop thefts, 8 from Morrison's and Tesco in Galston, and 2 at Tesco Express in Cambridge. Appearing via video link from prison, he also admitted a further 7 thefts to be taken into consideration. Simon Jessop, prosecuting, said the total losses to the stores had been more than £1,400, with none of the stolen items recovered. Annette Hall, mitigating, said the court's sentencing options were limited as he was not due to be released from prison until April 2028. Magistrates ordered him to pay compensation upon his release, but said any outstanding sentence would be concurrent and therefore ineffective. King was sentenced to 4.5 years in prison at Cambridge Crown Court in 2023 after pleading guilty to intentional strangulation, criminal damage, breach of a criminal behaviour order and theft. The court heard he had turned up at the victim's home in the city drunk, holding a black holdall. When the woman declined the meat, he grabbed her by the throat so she was unable to breathe and didn't let go until one of her children entered the room.
A young family has been left devastated after a fire ripped through their home in Caister. A blaze broke out at the house on Webster Way in Caister at 9:30 a.m. before engulfing the entire property. A young couple with two children managed to escape the house before firefighters arrived at the scene. No one was hurt in the incident. Jess Holland, aged 23, and who lived in the home with her partner Bradley and their son and daughter, said, "In 30 seconds, the house was gone. All of us were in the house at the time, the four of us. By the time I finished on the phone to the fire brigade, the house was fully on fire. It just popped and black smoke came out. I screamed and Brad came down. We grabbed our children and came out. Brad walked past the fire. I could see flames out of the back door, and 2 minutes later the front was on fire as well. The blaze is believed to have been caused by a Segway device that had been charging overnight before catching fire. Five crews arrived at the property within 10 minutes of the emergency call to tackle the blaze before leaving at 10:45 a.m. once the fire had been tackled. Mrs. Holland's mother, Tiffany, and father, Trevor, rushed back from Norwich Airport, where they had been about to catch a flight. Mrs. Holland said, "We were just about to fly off at Norwich Airport. We were planning to go to Benidorm for a few days, and we were going up the steps to the flight. The most important thing was that Jess, Brad, and the kids were out of the house. Family and friends have now begun a clean-up operation and are salvaging what they can from the home. The community has already rallied around the family, and neighbours could be seen bringing nappies, toiletries and buggies to the family. A fundraiser has also been set up to support the family and has so far raised almost £2,000.
Scrapping a watchdog that helps patients raise concerns about their health care risks, paving the way for another NHS scandal, critics have warned. Alex Stewart, Chief Executive of Healthwatch Norfolk, which was set up to champion the views of patients, said disarming the independent organisation could threaten public safety and scrutiny of the county's health systems. A year ago, the then Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, announced all Health Watch organisations, including Norfolk, would be axed as part of the government's 10-year plan for the NHS. It would see all local branches of the organisation scrapped and patient feedback instead given through the Norfolk and Suffolk Integrated Care Board. Critics, including Dr. Wendy Taylor, MBE, Chair of the Local Government Association's Health and Wellbeing Committee, have said that is effectively making the NHS to mark its own homework. The Health Watch groups were created in 2012 after the mid-Staffordshire NHS scandal, where systematic failings of care at Stafford Hospital contributed to hundreds of unnecessary deaths. Mr. Stewart warned abolishing Health Watch risked a lack of independent scrutiny and could see such situations happen again. He said, "To cease the statutory functions of Health Watch without a suitable alternative in place, one that inspires the same level of trust and confidence as the body it is replacing, is to risk another major failing in patient safety and scrutiny of the health system. This is a risk that the NHS can ill afford at a time of huge change and when public confidence in our health system is already fragile. It is more important than ever that independent patient voice is defended, not silenced." A Department of Health and Social Care spokesman said, "We're informing how the NHS operates to make it easier to access care. We value the work of local health watch organisations, but these changes will give patients and service users a stronger, clearer voice at the heart of health and social care. By bringing the patient voice closer to the decision makers, people's experience will have a more direct impact on services.
Apparently, Yarmouth needs to build 10,000 new homes. Council leaders have warned that government housing targets could overwhelm infrastructure and see surrounding communities absorbed into the town. Ministers have told Greater Yarmouth Borough Council it needs to build as many as 10,000 new homes by 2045, increasing its target by almost 50%. Its current target means it needs to build 353 homes per year, but that is expected to rise to 525 every year. Now, the council fears that villages in the surrounding area may no longer exist, as they will merge with the seaside town. At a cabinet meeting on Tuesday, June 2nd, Carl Smith, Conservative leader of the council, said, "We can't just keep building and building houses without having any infrastructure. It will just be Great Yarmouth. They won't be any villages." Daniel Condon, responsible for growth at the council, warned the increase in housing targets without improving infrastructure means more pressure on vital services such as schools and GPs. Councils are regularly being told by residents they are deeply worried about what this means, he said. All of them are asking quite, how can our area be expected to take this level of growth? Next month, the council is expected to approve its blueprints for where homes will be built up until 2042. But it is already being tasked by the government with getting to work on where more houses will be constructed as part of the 2045 local plan. Developing the new strategy for house building could mean almost 10,000 properties are built between 2026 and 2045. During the meeting, the senior Conservative cabinet members threatened to make a stand against the demands from Westminster. However, they were told by a council official the housing secretary could intervene and draft a 2045 local plan for them. He said, "If we fail to make progress with your plan, the government will intervene. The Secretary of State could step in and prepare your local plan for you." Cabinet members said that they would recommend a full council. It should start preparing the Great Yarmouth 2045 local plan as a result of the pressures from central government.
Well, much more full fat news in just a while after Julie and Dusty have given us some news in brief.
A service will be held to mark the anniversary of D-Day in Great Yarmouth, taking place in St George's Park on June the 6th. The commemoration honours the 1944 Normandy landings, when nearly 160,000 Allied troops stormed the beaches of France to begin the liberation of occupied Europe. The annual event is organised by Great Yarmouth Borough Council in partnership with the Great Yarmouth Minster and the town's Royal British Legion branch to remember those who fought and died for our freedom. Jade Martin, the Mayor of Great Yarmouth, said, "The annual D-Day service at St George's Park is an important opportunity for our community to come together to honour and remember those who sacrificed so much during the Second World War. Members of the public are invited to attend the service, gathering at 10:50 a.m. for an 11 a.m. start, led by the Reverend Liz Dawes. The service will include readings, prayers, hymns and a 2-minute silence." Primary school in Great Yarmouth has held a dance marathon that raised more than £2,000. The St Nicholas CVA Primary School and Nursery came alive with music, energy and excitement as 450 pupils took part in a five-hour sponsored dance marathon. The event, orchestrated by the Primary Family Friends Group, spanned the school playground and was led by Mascot Madness Discos. Sounds fun. The disco group kept the youngsters moving with fun routines and lively tracks, creating an enjoyable atmosphere throughout the day. The school plans to use the proceeds to provide additional equipment and unique experiences for their children. Tributes have been paid to a dearly loved man whose body was found in a river after extensive searches. The search was launched after a man was seen entering the River Yare near Ferry Road at Surlingham on Friday afternoon. The search continued into Saturday when a man's body was discovered just after 5:20 p.m. after the use of sonar equipment and a dive team. The man had now been named as Greg Howes, 44. His death is being treated as unexplained, but it is not believed to be suspicious. The hunt for a man accused of rape in the town is continuing weeks after the alleged attacks. The incident occurred on May the 16th on South Beach Parade in Great Yarmouth. Police were alerted to reports that two teenage girls had been raped in the early hours of the morning. The man, aged in his 30s, was arrested in Northamptonshire the following day on suspicion of rape, but has since been released on bail. However, an outstanding suspect in the case remains at large. He is described as a white male with short, dark hair, dark facial hair, and aged in his 30s or 40s. A man has appeared in court accused of threatening to kill his wife. Yuri Johnson has been charged with making threats to kill the woman in January 2026. The 59-year-old has also been accused of controlling and coercive behaviour towards her between December 2015 and January 2026. Johnson, from Mount Patten Way, Caister-on-Sea, appeared in Norwich Crown Court on Monday, June 1st, for a plea and trial preparation hearing. But no pleas were entered by Johnson, who was unrepresented when he appeared in court. Recorder Ruth Brander warned Johnson faced very serious charges and urged him to seek legal representation before pleas were put to him. The case was adjourned until June 15th to allow Johnson to seek legal representation.
A Norfolk digital agency has appointed a new managing director. Net Matters, which is based in Wyndham with offices in Great Yarmouth and Cambridge, has announced Elliot Peacock as its new managing director, becoming only the third MD in the company's history, following Chris Gulliver and James Gulliver. The firm provides web design, software development, digital marketing, IT support and cybersecurity services to businesses. Mr. Peacock will oversee the day-to-day operations of the business, while James Gulliver will move into the role of executive chairman, and this will be supporting the company's adoption of artificial intelligence, AI. Having been part of Net Matters for many years, it is an honour to take on the role of managing director, Mr. Peacock said. And another item now, we have tough planning rules may mean a homeowner from Galston Seafront cannot add a driveway to the front of his property, despite three close neighbours having one. Peter Shepherd has been blocked from making the changes to his Edwardian house on Marine Parade by Great Yarmouth Borough Council. The decision has been made despite recognition from a council official that there are three other properties in the row of terraced houses that have driveways. However, these were installed before new planning measures were introduced, including the extension of the Cliff Hill Conservation Area to cover Marine Parade in 2009. Thousands of people flocked to the area of Great Yarmouth to enjoy one of the UK's biggest arts festivals. Great Yarmouth hosted the International Out There Festival from Thursday, May the 28th to Saturday, May the 30th. St George's Park was jam-packed over the 3 days with family and friends entertained by quirky, bizarre and fun acts including street performance, dance, theatre and circus acts. There was a carnival atmosphere across the town at that festival, which is produced by Out There Arts and centred in the park. It spilled across streets with multiple other stages dotted around near the drill hall. An organiser said it was a magical 3 days, during which festival goers enjoyed performances by 200 artists from 9 countries. A man accused of wounding another man with a knife following attack is set to stand trial. Lee Philpott appeared at Norwich Crown Court, having been charged with wounding a man with intent and having an article with a blade or point, namely a Stanley knife. It follows an incident in Nelson Road, Great Yarmouth, on May the 2nd this year, when Philpott is said to have attacked a man. The 50-year-old of no fixed abode, but who appeared via video link from HMP Prison, Norwich, denied both offences when he appeared at court on Monday, June the 1st. A trial, expected to last 5 days, was fixed for November 16th by recorder Ruth Brander. And another sad item here. A man in his 70s and a woman in her 60s have died following a crash last weekend. The collision happened last Saturday at 4:13 p.m. on the A143 as it crosses marshland at Haddiscoe. A black Ford KA left the road and overturned into a water-filled ditch, say the police. Both occupants were taken to hospital in critical condition. However, both of them in the vehicle have since died in hospital. The man died on Tuesday and the lady died yesterday. Officers are appealing for witnesses, dash cam footage or information about the manner of driving before the collision comes to court.
Don't forget Grapevine Extra coming up with the full crew with subjects various after the rest of this week's local news.
A local holiday park has been granted permission to stage outdoor events despite objections from hotel giant Whitbread. Councillors approved Vauxhall Holiday Park's bid to run amplified performance outside until 11 p.m, clearing the way for Park Dean Resorts to expand its programme of themed weekend of festivals. Whitbread, which operates the nearby Premier Inn, had urged the Borough Council's licensing panel to reject the application. They claimed the holiday park had not proposed adequate safety measures. The company's solicitor warned that the plans failed to provide sufficient measures in several areas, including public safety and the prevention of disorder. At a licensing meeting, however, councillors voted to approve the licence. Vauxhall Holiday Park, off the A47 Akelnew Road, attracts tens of thousands of visitors each year and is known for large-scale music weekends celebrating genres and eras from soul and Motown to ska and 1960s to 80s hits. Until now, those events have been restricted to indoor venues. An application for a new licensed outdoor seating area and beer garden was not taken forward and subsequently refused by the council.
The newly elected Reform UK administration at Norfolk County Council has removed the Ukrainian flag from County Hall and banned the flying of the Progress Pride banner. The party has introduced a new policy for the display of flags from the council building after it took over control of the authority last week. The only ones allowed will be the Union flag, the flag of St George, the Norfolk flag and the Norfolk County Council flag. However, royal flags, as well as those of the British Armed Forces, the Merchant Navy and the emergency services, can be flown on special occasions. It means the end of the Ukraine national flag, which has appeared above the council HQ since the country was invaded by Russia in February 2022. It also means the Progress flag will no longer be flown during Pride Month, as it has previously. David Bick, the new leader of the council, stressed that the removal of the Ukraine flag was not meant to indicate a reduction in support for the country. He said, "We are proud of our national and local flags, and it is entirely appropriate that these are the only flags flown above Norfolk County Hall. The lowering of the Ukraine flag should not be interpreted as any reduction in support for the Ukrainian people. Norfolk has welcomed and supported those displaced by the war, and this support remains unchanged." Similar flag policies at Suffolk and Essex County Councils, which were also taken over by the Reform after last month's elections, have already been announced. Valery Zelensky, ambassador of Ukraine to the United Kingdom, wrote to Mr. Bick earlier this week, thanking Norfolk County Council for its support of the war-torn country. He said, "The warm welcome that my compatriots received in the county is much appreciated." Councillor Bick added, "This will in no way diminish our support for the Ukrainian people, who are protecting their homeland and, in effect, helping to protect the rest of Europe from unprovoked militarisation. The Ukrainian community in Norfolk will continue to be very welcome here, as will its contribution to our society." However, Kay Mason Billing, Tory leader at County Hall and the former council leader, said, "It is disrespectful to the people of Ukraine. We decided to show solidarity with them, and we have taken in quite a lot of refugees. We are trying to show them that we support them. To take the Ukrainian flag down is a despicable act. If Reform want to side with Putin, then that sends a signal to all of Norfolk." The flying of Progress flags from public buildings has become hotly contested. The emblem is a redesign of the previous rainbow pride flag, featuring the addition of colours to represent transgender, intersex, people of colour and those affected by HIV, AIDS, as part of the wider LGBTQ plus community. Critics, including members of the LGB community, say the symbol, which features the colours of the transgender flag, promotes gender ideology. This is the controversial idea that people's so-called gender identity should take primacy over biological sex. The issue is the focus of legal disputes and intense public debate, and opponents say it is inappropriate for public bodies like councils to fly the flag, arguing they should remain neutral on the subject.
The mental health treatment of a domestic worker who died after being struck by a train is set to be examined at an inquest next month. A review hearing into the death of Ravenna Barry, heard that the 41-year-old's body was discovered last year close to railway tracks, about 4 miles from her home. Mrs. Barry of Deepdale Brundle died on November the 28th near Buckenham Railway Station. Emergency services attended, but she was pronounced dead at the scene. An opening of the inquest held at Norfolk Coroner's Court the following month heard that the provisional cause of death was severe multiple injuries consistent with being struck by a train. A further review hearing this week revealed that several matters must be considered before the full inquest can take place in July. Area coroner Joanna Thompson said Mrs. Barry had been reported missing from her home on several occasions over the years. She said the investigation would examine Mrs. Barry's state of mind in the period leading up to her death, as well as any mental health treatment that she'd received in the week before she died. The cause of death will also be explored. A number of witnesses are expected to give evidence at the full inquest, including family members and friends, Mrs. Barry's GP, ambulance staff who attended the scene, and police officers involved in the investigation. Dr. Champney of Norfolk and Suffolk NHS Foundation Trust is also expected to give evidence. A patient safety incident investigation report commissioned by the Trust is currently being completed and is due to be published later this month. The inquest will also consider notes written by Mrs. Barry and material obtained by British Transport Police. The full inquest is due to take place on July the 15th from 10 a.m. at Norfolk Coroner's Court.
And this is another sad story about another blaze in a residential area. People have described their shock at seeing a blaze at a building, saying that it was like a scene from a horror movie. A bedroom at number 11 Nelson Road South in Great Yarmouth has been completely destroyed after a fire ignited on Sunday evening. It's understood a woman who lived in the room on the first floor was taken to hospital but has since been released. Those living in the area have now described their confusion as smoke billowed into the sky. Jay Robson, 51, and who lives on Havelock Road, just behind Nelson Road South, said it was like a scene from a horror movie. It was a weird situation. We were standing outside, and 60 or 70 people were outside. Everyone was floating around. The fire erupted at around 8:25 p.m. before emergency services, including four fire engines, quickly arrived at the scene. Plumes of smoke rose from the blacked-out room as the blaze also scorched the window frame of the bedroom above. Manuel Bernardo, 64, who lives on Nelson Road South, said, "It was very intense smoke. It was a bit brown. I could smell the smoke. It was very strong and a bit toxic. I could hear a fire alarm. The firemen were washing the fire away, and they said stay inside. I was a bit surprised." All rooms of the HMO, where it is understood the woman had been living for 11 years, were evacuated. Fire crew got the blaze under control and left the scene at around 10:30 p.m. It remains unclear what sparked the fire.
Four arrests were made during the live facial recognition patrols in Great Yarmouth over the weekend, but only two were from using the equipment. The technology was used in the town centre on Saturday and Sunday, with nearly 24,000 faces scanned. No arrests were made on the Saturday, but four people were detained on Sunday. However, of the arrests, two were made proactively rather than as a direct use of live facial recognition tools. Across four patrols, two in Norwich and two in Great Yarmouth, five arrests have been made in total, with just three as a result of scans made by the technology. The tool enables officers to compare faces captured on a live camera feed to people on a predetermined watch list. It relies on biometric data, which is taken by mapping out faces within the zone and taking measurements of facial features, which are then compared against the police watch list. Civil liberty campaigners have called for police to abandon plans of the intrusive technology more suited to authorisation regimes.
I think I ought to just offer a warning on this one, because it's going to be very distressing to people who are bird lovers. Seagulls in Great Yarmouth and nearby coastal towns and villages have been subjected to at least 15 deliberate attacks over the past decade, new figures are showing. Data released by Norfolk Police reveals incidents recorded between January 2016 and March this year in Great Yarmouth, Galston, Caister and surrounding communities. 12 of the 15 cases were logged as crimes. The reports include birds shot with air guns, trapped using bait and hooks, a nest destroyed, a gull stamped on, and several cases of nesting birds being disturbed. In 2019, 5 attacks were recorded, including one in which a gull was killed after being run over by a mobility scooter in Great Yarmouth Marketplace. Despite the range of offences, none of the incidents resulted in a charge, caution, or conviction. 7 cases were closed with no suspect identified, 3 ended due to evidential difficulties, 1 was deemed not in the public interest to prosecute, and 1 was cancelled. Under the Wildlife and Countryside Act 1981, intentionally killing or injuring a gull is a criminal offence carrying a maximum penalty of a £5,000 fine or up to 6 months in prison. An RSPCA spokesperson said that gulls remained one of the most victimised wild birds, and the charity continued to receive reports of deliberate or extreme cruelty. They added, "While we know not everybody likes gulls, others find them amazing animals, and we exist to protect and prevent cruelty to all animals, including those which are less popular or misunderstood. All animals have feelings and emotions, whether they are pets, wildlife, on farms, or in labs, and they all deserve to have a fulfilled life of their own." Herring gulls are currently on the UK's red list of birds of conservation concern. Their numbers have fallen by around 75% since 1969, from roughly 200,000 breeding pairs to about 50,000.
At the Royal British Legion Great Yarmouth branch is set to host Armed Forces Day at the Britannia Pier. The event is scheduled for Saturday, June the 27th, from 10 o'clock to 4 o'clock, will see cadet forces from across the borough on parade. Great Yarmouth Mayor Jade Martin will present a shield to the best cadet force on parade, with other awards being offered to the best in training and the best cadet presented by sponsors Guardline. The event will also feature military and emergency vehicles, as well as representatives from the Great Yarmouth and Galston Lifeboat and Coast Watch, Blood Bikes, and the past and present Commonwealth Grave Restoration Team. The public is invited to learn more about the activities of the cadet forces, with opportunities for photographs. There will also be representatives from the ambulance and fire brigade services. The children will provide entertainment, singing and acting from lunchtime till late. A spokesperson for the Royal British Legion's Great Yarmouth branch said, "A day for the public to come and visit us, ask questions, find out what our cadets get up to."
People living in caravans. People are continuing to pitch up in eyesore caravans in the town. A caravan is parked up on Kitchener Road in Great Yarmouth after the Borough Council identified the road as a hot spot. It comes after Great Yarmouth Borough Council cleared almost 20 abandoned caravans and vans from roads in the town. Last month, Paul Wells, the councillor's portfolio holder for the environment and substantiating licence and waste, said, "We know how frustrated residents have been when they see abandoned vehicles or people living in vans on residential streets. There are no waste utilities or other facilities for people living in such circumstances, and these are wholly inappropriate places for vehicles to be parked up permanently. Other vehicles are dumped and become a target for vandalism and crime." The Borough Council now has a newly assigned responsibility for tackling illegal highway encampments across the area. It said 5 people have been found long-term accommodation and a total of 19 caravans and vans have been permanently removed to prevent further unauthorised use. In addition to Kitchener Road, the council said it was focusing efforts on Wellesley Road, Bloomfield Road and South Beach Parade. Mr Wells added, "Since the council recently took on responsibility for Norfolk County Council for dealing with illegal highway encampments in the borough, our teams have been working closely with individuals to offer advice and the right help." This is a sight becoming increasingly common across the UK, and we are making a difference locally to clear up our streets, while at the same time providing all the support we can for the people who might need assistance. Rupert Lowe, MP for the town, has been fighting for the caravans to be removed. A spokesman for his party, Great Yarmouth First, said, "Rupert has been tackling the issue of caravans at Kitchener Road for over 18 months. We have seen more progress recently, but understand that there is a lengthy legal process to follow to get these caravans removed. We will continue to press Great Yarmouth Borough Council for prompt action on this. They are an eyesore and must be removed."
An independent electrical retailer is set to close 8 stores, putting 60 jobs at risk. Hughes Electrical is closing its Norfolk stores in Diss, Dereham, Hunstanton, North Walsham, Norwich's Mason Road and Thetford, alongside its stores in Clacton and Wisbeach this Saturday, June 6. Hughes said, "It recognises the need to adapt and evolve its offer. Due to increasing operating costs, the rise of online shopping and changing customer expectations in store. A total of 35 staff are set to be affected by the store's closures, who were told their roles were at risk of redundancy in group meetings on Monday, June the 1st. The business is also proposing to close its Norwich delivery depot in Mason Road, where a further 25 staff could be affected. An individual consultation process is underway, which is expected to take between 1 and 2 weeks. Those affected will have the opportunity to apply for a number of alternative positions across the business. Mark Wardle, Hughes' CEO, said, "These have not been easy decisions to make. Many of those affected have worked with Hughes for a long time and played a huge part in the business we are today. All will receive the honesty, respect and support they deserve through the difficult process ahead. We understand the news will be very upsetting for our teams, but we have acted now to ensure the long-term success of the business. A smaller physical footprint will allow us to invest more online and in our remaining stores and better serve our communities, whether that's through retail, domestic rental, or via our business division. Hughes Electrical was founded in Lowestoft in 1921, but 10 of its stores across East Anglia, including Fakenham, Great Yarmouth, King's Lynn and Norwich Hall Road in Norfolk, and Beccles, Bury St Edmunds, Ipswich, Felixstowe Road, Ipswich, Martlesham and Lowestoft in Suffolk will remain open.
A social housing association wants to build a new estate in Halvergate. Saffron Housing is seeking permission from Broadland District Council to build 15 affordable homes on land between Moulton Road and Church Avenue in the village. 11 of the houses would be for social rent and 4 for shared ownership. A design and access statement says priority would be given to people with a local connection to Halvergate. This would include those with family and employment connections to the village, as well as those already living in Halvergate and in need of new housing. The plans are facing 4 objections from members of the public, with some claiming the new estate would lead to segregation in the village. One resident said, "Unfortunately, there is a stigma associated with this type of housing, rightly or wrongly, and grouping them together only adds to that stigma, creating an us and them mindset." Another warned that a large estate would spoil the village. Halvergate Parish Council is supporting the application, and a decision on the bid is expected this month.
Bid for Broad's boat shed to become holiday let refused. A businessman wanting to fund his retirement by renting out a boat shed has lost his latest battle with officials to say he is not allowed to. In 2023, John Atkins bought the property in Horning, in the heart of the Norfolk Broads, with plans to turn it into a holiday let. However, he later learned it did not have the necessary permissions to be used for overnight accommodation. The 65-year-old property developer tried to challenge the decision made by the Broads Authority at appeal, but failed. Now he has been told a follow-up bid to change the use of the boat shed cannot go ahead either. Officials insist the property should not be used for overnight stays because it will create additional sewage and pollute the nearby River Bure. Due to being situated on the nearby dike, there are strict planning controls in place. One of the reasons the latest proposal has been blocked is because the nearby Horning Knackers Wood Water Recycling Centre is at operational limit and no more developments can be accommodated. Officials say people applying to build new homes or make changes to existing properties in the area will not be looked on favourably until issues in the water recycling centre have been addressed. Mr. Atkins has also been told his application does not comply with strict nutrient neutrality measures. They say the property developers have failed to present a mitigation scheme to address an increase in nitrates and phosphates. The location of the boat shed means people have to show their proposal will not have an impact on the landscape. After the first rejection earlier this year, Mr. Atkins revealed it could put his retirement plans in jeopardy. He said, "It is frustrating, but it was also my naivety. I also blame myself. I have potentially lost part of a big investment. It will be a huge blow to my retirement. If I can't use the holiday let, I will probably have to sell it for about half of what I paid for it."
Jenard Brown has made a weekly visit to the Pier Hotel in Galston, her hometown, for more than 40 years. Mm-hmm. And on Saturday afternoon, the venue will hold a party marking her 108th birthday. 2 years ago, she marked her birthday with a horse and carriage ride around Great Yarmouth. And last year, she enjoyed a special spin around the town on a motorcycle. When she was born on June the 4th, 1918, David Lloyd George was the Prime Minister, and the First World War was in its final months. Born in Barking in Essex, Mrs. Brown moved to Great Yarmouth with an aunt and uncle when she was a baby, living in Maygrove Road, then Northgate Street, and going to the Priory School. In October 1930, she was among a group of schoolchildren who watched the Prince of Wales, later King Edward VII, officially open Haven Bridge. She was then guest of honour when the Herring Bridge was opened in 2024. Her son, Peter Brown, said, "Mum loves to laugh and to chat. She really enjoys a game of Scrabble and a couple of glasses of Stone's ginger wine every day." Well, we can actually add on to that, that we have seen her each week, haven't we, enjoying her game of cards with her son.
Yes.
Oh, she's so happy, and she's such a delightful person. She really is. Anyway, he went on to say, "Once a week we have lunch at the pier, where she's treated like royalty by Margaret and all the staff and customers. She adores a party, and I know she's going to enjoy her day on Saturday and her sing-along with her favourite singer, Carla." Margaret Goss, co-owner of the pier, said, "Jenna is a remarkable person with a wonderful sense of humour. We all felt that we had to make this an amazing milestone really special for her. Singer Carla Bear will be performing all of Jenna's favourite songs, and I know our guest of honour will be singing along with her. We're also hoping that Great Yarmouth Mayor, Councillor Jade Martin, will come along to offer birthday wishes. And I'm sure that we at Grapevine all offer her our fondest love and her congratulations on such a wonderful achievement for a very special lady." And just another note, which is just as important, really. The oldest living person in Britain is Ethel Caterham, and she is 116.
Congratulations.
Isn't that wonderful? Yes. God bless them all.
A plea for the sale of 20 Norfolk care homes to be paused and reversed after the Conservatives lost control of County Hall has been rejected. But Reform UK leaders, despite blocking a motion from opposition councillors asking for the process to be put on hold, said they have yet to decide its stance over the impending sale. Norfolk County Council agreed an in-principle deal to sell its own company, Norse Care, and 20 care homes to private company, Stowe Healthcare Group, earlier this year when the Conservatives were in control of the authority. The people living in the homes and the staff would remain under the new ownership. However, the deal has yet to be concluded, and the council had to agree an extension to its contract with Norse Care, which ended in March, to keep running them until July. In last month's elections, the Conservatives lost control of County Hall, with Reform UK now leading the authority as a minor administration. At the first meeting of the council since the county went to the ballot box, independent county councillor Alexandra Kemp tabled a motion asking the council to agree to pause and reverse the sell-off. Miss Kemp, who represents Clench Wharton and King's Lynn South, said there's no mandate for this sell-off. The care homes are good. If we go ahead and sell them off, we'll lose control not only of the fees, but of the existence of these care homes and whether there will be enough in the various parts of Norfolk. We have to be at the mercy of the private sector when we place people into care. She called for the council to carry out condition checks on the homes to establish if the council could instead keep and invest in the homes. Brian Watkins, leader of the Liberal Democratic Group, backed the motion and said, "It's important that something of this magnitude is not rushed, and a period of reflection allows for a full understanding of all the issues." It was also supported by the Green group leader, Maxine Webb, who said, "I really hope that the new administration can actually now support this decision being re-looked at." However, Conservative group leader Kay Mason-Billig, who was leader of the council when the principal sale decision was made, did not back the motion. She said Norse Care had not had the money to fully refurbish the homes and that the COVID pandemic had got in the way of efforts to revamp some of them. She said once Norse Care made the decision to come out of the care market, the council had no choice but to do something. None of the Reform UK councillors spoke during the debate on the motion, which was rejected by 52 votes to 24. But after the meeting, Scott Hussey, Cabinet Member for Adult Social Care and Public Health, said, "I'm working to get a full picture of the situation and its implications before forming a definitive position. No decisions have been finalised. The future of the Norse care homes is a priority. I can assure residents, families and staff that continuity of care will remain the primary consideration. Any responsible decision must, however, account for the fiscal reality that we have inherited. It's deeply regrettable that the Conservatives, despite racking up more than £900 million of debt, still failed to make the necessary investment to modernise the care homes. Of the 20 care homes affected, only Galston's Lydia Eva is in our immediate area, although three Norse care properties, including Springdale Care Home in Brundle, have already shut."
Well, that's all this week's news done and dusted, so welcome to Grapevine Extra. District nurses and babies are among the subjects discussed by this week's team, so with an open mic, it's over to them.
Having been in hospital recently a few times and had a visit or two from the district nurses, who are absolutely wonderful, don't get me wrong, they're absolutely wonderful, but it's a strange thing to have a visit that we've never had one before. And there's a beautiful picture in the Eastern Daily here which are similar to those of Emma's mum's recollections of Nurse Daniels. This is a lovely picture in here of this dear little lady on a little bike and a little uniform and everything, and they used to go round on their bikes all the time, didn't they? And apparently in response to the column on medical services of yesteryear, Eric Howman, aged 89, recalled nurses visiting schools twice a year to examine pupils and de-lice them with DTT powder if they had nits. Well, and we know all they did that, but I can just imagine spraying around with this DTT powder. I just imagine it. And on his first GP visit, Eric said, "I just waited until it was my turn to see the doctor. And there was no pushing and shoving in there. The doctors, nurses and midwives were so caring and dedicated. They would even turn up at your home day or night when you needed treatment." And our district nurse was telling us, wasn't she, the other day, Julie, that they have to go anywhere and everywhere in the county. They don't know where they're going to go tomorrow, today or anything. Right. And they do work terribly hard, and I just want to, you know, say thank you to them, really, because they do a wonderful job. And Emma says, my mum's recollections reminded Marion Keane of her grandmother, who was a district nurse and former senior ward sister. She left after her wedding in 1910, as it was frowned upon for married women to work at that time. Mm-hmm. See, we don't realise that, do we? Young people don't understand that. But nurses were recalled to do duty in the face of huge numbers of casualties from the First World War. And at the end, she delayed retirement until she was in her 70s. That's amazing, isn't it? Yeah. Marion said, we lived in the same house and were prepared for loud knocking on the door with urgent cries of nurse, nurse, through the letterbox. There was no doctor or surgery in the village, and neither did we have a phone. The bicycle in your picture and the nurse's uniform are very evocative, although, of course, my granny's bike was pedal power only. Off she'd go, sometimes long distances and often in the dark or the blackout with no street lights. You see, we do not know what people did, and we have to be very grateful for what they're doing now, because some countries have nothing, do they?
Yeah.
And aren't we lucky? Don't you think so, Stephen?
Yes, it's so certainly, as you say, if you can leave hospital, then you need the dressings changes. They turn up to change the dressings.
Yeah.
And then
yes. I mean, I'm having to bare my backside, which is a little bit dodgy. But there you are. That's what I'm grateful for, that their help.
Yeah. Going back to the schools thing, though, Dust.
Yeah.
I can remember being at school and we had to go in alphabetical order.
Oh, did you?
Oh, nice. Well, but this was not a good thing if your name was Wyatt. Because
you
always lost. W-Y couldn't be worse, could it?
No,
couldn't
really.
And then this girl joined our school and she was called Zera Motchek. Jennifer Zera Motchek. And she suddenly became the last one.
Rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, I'll never forget her. Coming after me.
Lovely. Yeah. We have a lovely lady who was on district nurse, and she did a lot of work around the schools in Galston, maybe possibly Yarmouth as well, but certainly Galston. And she had two sisters, I remember, and this lady was a nurse. And I was attending Stradbrook Infant School. This would have been in the late 1940s. And anyway, she'd come round to used to examine our heads and pull us about and make sure we were in good shape. And then, due to family circumstances, I moved rather quickly to the Rawton Infant School. And about 3 or 4 weeks later, she turned up there. And when she saw me, she said, "Hello, Margaret," she said, "what are you doing here?" Well, it was lovely, though.
I don't think, but I think by the time I got to school in the 70s, they'd stopped doing hair. I don't think they had the hair checks anymore. I do remember the school nurse sort of thing, checking you up once a year, but nothing, I don't think we did any
nitchens. Do you remember the school dentist coming round?
No, I don't
think. Because at one time they used to come round twice a year.
Mm.
And I mean, when I was teaching at Caister in the 1970s, I remember they were still coming and picking up all sorts of problems and treating the children. I don't know where they did it, but they did.
Yes. Mm. Well, the good old days of preventive medicine before they decided to only treat what's in front of them, not what might be around, yes. Yeah.
That's right.
Yes, it was all very different, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
But mind you, the dental situation today is absolutely dreadful, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, thankfully there was a clinic that came round somewhere the other day, and people were so relieved to get some help.
That was sort of food bank, wasn't it? Or somewhere like that.
I think it was, yes.
Yeah. Luckily, I got in with plumbers when they were still taking patients, and they... And now people come along and say, "Sorry, no more, you have to go private." And
A friend of mine managed that at Plumbers.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you mean.
At least they are continuing it, and they must have thousands of people on their books, because they've got four or five of them, haven't they, around here?
Yeah,
so at least we're not as bad as some places where they say there's not a dentist in 20 miles.
That's terrible, isn't it?
Yeah.
And if you've got a raging toothache, that's not funny, is it?
No.
No.
Really?
No. And at least with plumbers, you can ring up in the morning and get seen the same day.
Yes, yes, I suppose so.
It was so different when
yeah.
You know, I mean, I've been the same dentist since I was 18.
Mm.
And, you know, yeah. As you say, you could ring up. If I was working away, I'd come home
yes.
to my dentist.
Yeah.
Because you get to know them.
The people, yes.
Trust them, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, you do. But, yes, it's a...
You had something, Julie, to...
I have, but...
Okay, well... Right, okay.
So, I think a lot of you will be able to relate to this. So, Mum says, Max... There's a baby in my tummy, Mom said with a big smile. Dad was smiling too. Isn't that exciting, Maxie? Max stared at Mom's tummy, then at Mom, then at her tummy again. Max grabbed Mr. Bear and ran straight to his room. Mum ate a baby. This is bad, Mr. Bear, he whispered. This is very bad. At dinner, Mum dipped a pickle in ice cream, and then she put jam on her cheese, and then she ate three bowls of cereal in a row. Max watched from across the table with his eyes wide. I can't help it, Mum laughed. I'm eating for two. Max slid under the table. She ate a baby, and she's still hungry, Mr. Bear, he whispered. Mr. Bear said nothing, but he looked worried. The next day, Mum fell asleep on the couch in the middle of the afternoon with a biscuit still in her hand. Her tummy was definitely getting bigger. Max tiptoed over and he leaned in close. Hello, he whispered to Mum's tummy. Are you okay in there? Thump. Something moved. Something inside his mum moved. Max jumped back. It's alive! Mum woke up. Of course it is, silly, she laughed. Max grabbed Mr. Bear and stumbled out of the back door. We need to do something, Mr. Bear. And Mr. Bear agreed. The next day, Mum's friend came over with a new baby. Oh, she's so beautiful, said Mum. Can I hold her? She reached out her arms towards the baby. Max's eyes went wide. Oh, no! Oh, no! No! Max shouted, and he threw himself in front of the baby like a superhero. You can't eat this one, too! The room went very quiet, and Mum blinked, and Dad blinked, and Mum's friend held her baby a little tighter. What did he just say? And Mum bent down and took Max's hand. Sweetheart, I didn't eat a baby. Then why is it in your tummy? Dad knelt down too. The baby is growing in Mum's tummy, buddy. Like a seed grows in a flower. Mum's tummy is keeping it safe and warm until it's ready to come out. So she didn't eat it. I didn't eat it. Max looked at Mum's tummy, then at Mum, then at Mr. Bear. Oops, he whispered. Mum laughed, Dad laughed, even Mum's friend laughed. Max gave Mum's tummy a very gentle hug. Sorry, baby, he whispered. I thought you were dinner. Everyone laughed. Then Max looked up. Okay, but where do babies come from? Mum and Dad stopped laughing.
Story. Well, that's it for this week. Grapevine is copyright 2026 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Next week, your newsreaders will be Margaret C. and Andy. And, as I'm having a quick break in North Norfolk, Andrew will be in the chair. So, join them then for much more of your local news. But in the meantime, here's hoping that you stay safe and well. So from all your friends at Grapevine, have a good week, and it's bye for now.